This is the Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, broadcasting the League of Women Voters Forum for City Council candidates held on October 8th.
Good evening, and welcome to the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County Candidate Forum. This is Thursday, October 8th, 2015. Tonight, we will meet candidates for the Ames City Council. Thank you to the City of Ames for allowing us to use the City Council chambers. My name is Davita Hardin. I'm president of the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County, and I will moderate tonight's forum. The forum is broadcast live on Government Access Channel 12, live streamed on the City of Ames website, and will be archived for later viewing. There are three open seats for the City Council. The candidates are Brian Beatty Hansen at large, Matt Converse at large, Tim Garten, incumbent, Ward 2, Dan DeGist, Ward 4, Chris Nelson, incumbent, Ward 4. We will begin with a 3-minute introduction from each candidate. After the candidate's introduction, we will open the forum to questions and comments from the audience here and from those watching at home. At this time, I would like to also direct your attention to the timer. Cody Durack will help you manage your time when answering your question or asking your questions. We will start with the introductory remarks, beginning with Matt Converse, who could not be here tonight, but has submitted a statement to be read by Eve Lederhaus.
Thank you so much. Matt Converse regrets he is unable to attend the League of Women Voters Ames City Council Forum. Forums such as this one are great opportunities to ask candidates questions and learn about the candidates from their responses. However, Matt made plans back in March for a family event tonight, and that must take priority. Matt Converse is a lifelong resident of Ames and alumnus of both Ames High School and Iowa State University. He holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in history and a minor in political science, and later returned to ISU for construction engineering. Together with his wife, Sarah, they have two children, Andrew, age 11, and Allison, age 8. Ames has been so fortunate with success over the past 8 years. A new library, new and remodeled schools, expanded and renovated hospital, unprecedented private job creation and capital investment, record enrollment at Iowa State University, a new outdoor aquatic center, and a new water plant currently under construction. Our community has much to be proud of. As a community, we should be using these successes to enhance the amenities that a community the size of Ames should have. Housing. By encouraging a variety of housing types, our community will be able to meet the needs of all our Ames citizens, families, ISU students, professionals, and retirees alike. Transportation. We need to continue to invest our community's infrastructure, streets, stormwater management, bike and recreation trails, Sci-Ride, and the airport. Employment opportunities. Although Ames boasts low unemployment rates, we need to increase employment opportunities for all Ames residents. We can achieve this goal by supporting economic development initiatives, encouraging continued support of the ISU Research Park, and expanding private sector retail, as well as commercial and industrial opportunities. Senior services. Our community has been named as one of the best places to retire. Our community must continue and improve its support of Heartland Senior Services' countywide mission. Expanded services and possibly a different facility need to be a part of what the City of Ames provides for its retired citizens. Recreational activities. By working to find solutions to meet the needs for a shared-use, multi-basin indoor pool and additional recreational facilities, we can continue to enhance the overall quality of life in our community. While we will continue to face many challenges in the years ahead, Matt believes that if we work together and listen to all ideas, comments, and concerns, we can and will make Ames truly the best community in which to live, work, and receive an education. Matt will work diligently to bring our community together and to work and to make Ames the most livable city in Iowa. As a leader in our community, Matt is proud of the accomplishments Ames has achieved. But to be a truly great community, there is more that needs to be done as we look toward the long-term best interests of Ames. As a proven leader, Matt will bring his experience as a small business owner and a community volunteer to the Ames City Council and make decisions that are in the best interests of Ames. Thank you so much for your time and attention. Please do not hesitate to contact Matt with any campaign questions at matt@electconverse.com. Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Dan DeGeest, and I'm a candidate for the Ames 4th Ward. I'd like to thank the League of Women Voters for hosting this event tonight, and thank you for your continued hard work to engage all citizens to participate in the election process and the voting process. Your work exemplifies the best parts of our democracy and really honors the legacy of the founder, Kerry Chapman Catt, who was an Iowa State graduate here in the 1800s. I'd like to thank everyone that came for also participating and taking time out of your evening to help learn and help shape the future of Ames. I came to Ames in 1988 directly from high school. I enrolled at ISU early because I was super excited to get here. When I was in high school, I lived in a town of under 500 people. So for me, coming to Ames was incredibly exciting, a world of all kinds of new opportunities, a world of excitement. And nearly 30 years later, I still feel exactly that same way about the city of Ames today. I graduated from Iowa State University in 1994 with a degree in computer science. I started a family and began what's now about a 20-year career in software development, which has included working at most of the major startups in Ames, including engineering animation. And my current job is a senior software engineer at Workiva in the research park, where I began 6 years ago when we were a 30-person company, and we are now well over a 500 and some company here in Ames, 1,000 worldwide. I'm married to Amy. We have 5 kids. My oldest daughter is a sophomore in college, and I have 4 more at home, two in the high school, 1 at the middle school, and 1 in elementary. So I believe that each day we have a choice to make, and that's whether we're going to accept things the way they are or we're going to choose to participate to make a difference. So a little over 3 years ago, I got involved and helped start a group called the Ames Bicycle Coalition, and we had a mission at the time to make bicycling better in Ames. But what we learned over the 3 years that we've been working on this is that really the whole transportation system needs to be improved, and that it's not just a single issue. And the other thing that I learned while I've been participating and volunteering with the Ames Bicycle Coalition is that there's so many other issues in our city that are interrelated and interwoven that I just saw that I had a lot of passion and a lot of interest in a much broader range of issues for Ames. And that's kind of why I decided to run, because I felt that I had the same energy and passion that I bring to bicycling I could bring to a host of other issues for the city. So there's 3 things that I know we need to work on. I mentioned one already, transportation. I also believe that we need to work on affordable and also varied housing choices. It's not just about price. It's about looking at the kinds of people that we're trying to get in Ames for the jobs that we have. So there's a whole range of housing options we need to work on. And then continue to work on our job and cultural growth. And what I mean by cultural growth is that all the things that come along with having such a vibrant city and a super intelligent workforce and all these great opportunities should make everything else grow in conjunction with that. So I'm sure we'll get into a lot more detail on all those topics tonight. So thank you for having me, and I'm looking forward to your questions.
Next, we hear from Tim Garten, unopposed incumbent from Ward 2.
Well, thanks to the League for putting this together and for city staff for putting the mechanics of this together. I noticed we have sound tonight, so I'm very happy about this. Thanks to DeVita. Ames is on a good path. As you interact with people around the state, you realize that we have something special here. I truly believe we're on a very good path. And one of my goals on council is just not to screw this up. And in all seriousness, this didn't happen overnight. A lot of people have worked very hard to help put our city on good footing. And so I'm very excited about the future of Ames. I think our best days are ahead of us, and we'll talk about some of those things tonight, I'm sure. This election coming up is very important because you get to decide who's going to be sitting up here making important decisions that are going to affect this city going forward. I want to tell you that it's my opinion that all these people that are up here are all good candidates. They're all good people. They're the kinds of people that you would want to have for your neighbors and your coworkers. However, the purpose of this forum tonight isn't just for us to have a nice conversation, but if a forum is really going to have any value, it happens when you ask good questions and when the candidates provide answers that are meaningful with this goal. And lean in on this. We want a forum that's going to distinguish these candidates in terms of preparation, their background, and their ideas. Now, those are the two sort of broad categories. Does the candidate have the right level of preparation? Do they have the kind of background that you would want to have for a candidate? And what kind of ideas do they have? And so if it turns out that at the end of the forum, we all sound the same, the forum really hasn't achieved its goal. So I think when you leave tonight, you should come away saying, that's interesting. I learned about some of the differences between these candidates. Now, in some forums, if you have a candidate that does not have an opponent, they don't even get asked to participate in the forum. So I'm happy just to have a spot up here tonight. So in recognition of that, there may be a question or two that comes along where my answer is not going to contribute anything to the discussion. And so out of deference to those candidates who are in contested races, I may sit on my hands on this. And so let somebody else have a turn. So there may be some places where I pass, but I'll try to give input where I think it's helpful. So thanks again. This is going to be a fun night tonight. Look forward to the discussion.
I'm Chris Nelson, the current Ward 4 councilperson on City Council, and I am a sixth-generation Ames resident. My family has been here for over 150 years, since before even Ames was a town. In fact, my great-great-grandfather was a city councilperson in the mid-1880s, Charles Hafferly. I was born, raised here, graduated from Ames High, went to Iowa State, got degrees in chemical engineering and civil engineering, and then I made a mistake. I left. And my wife and I got married and moved to Chicago. We spent a couple years there. We moved to West Des Moines. We stayed there for 9 years. Bought a house, had kids, but then our kids got to be school-aged, and we decided, really, where do we want to be to raise our family? And it was a really easy decision. We made the decision to come back to Ames. We've been back for 8 years, haven't regretted a day of it. My wife, Ann Nelson, like I said, grew up here as well and also went to Iowa State. We have three boys in the Ames school system, one in elementary and two in the middle school. As far as experience and what I bring to the position, I think off the top, a two-year term on city council gives me pretty good experience with what's happening in the city of Ames. That all being said, I do have a diverse set of experiences that I do bring to the table in a variety of different leadership positions. We did some exciting things in my first term relating to new zoning districts in the research park, mixed-use projects. We started work on the power plant conversion and reacted well to continued rapid growth and enrollment at Iowa State. But I've also served on a number of boards over the last 8 years since I've been here. I'm just finishing a term as board chair of Mainstream Living and have served 7 years on the board. This organization provides community-based services to people with disabilities and is special to me personally as they serve the day-to-day needs of my sister-in-law. During my tenure, I was deeply involved in a leadership change due to a retirement and a number of challenging regulatory changes. I've also served on the boards of the Ames Chamber of Commerce and spent a term as treasurer, and also on the Farmhouse Fraternity Association board, where I served a term as board president. I also believe that community involvement is very important. I personally have chose, aside from my council commitment, to focus on youth and hope that it sets an example about the importance of future service to others. I have lived this through involvement as a youth soccer coach, a Cub Scout leader twice, and a confirmation mentor at our church. I also believe that you should never stop being curious and learning, and that's one of the things that I've really enjoyed about serving on council this last term. There are always opportunities to learn something new, and those opportunities should be embraced. Lastly, my participation in my family's business has taught me about listening, problem solving, customer service, integrity, fiscal responsibility, and dealing with challenging situations. I think these all tie together to give me what I think is a balanced view as to what I have done and will do as a member of the City Council. I hope I'm fortunate enough to continue to serve all of the people that make up the City of Ames.
My name is Bronwyn Beattie Hansen, and I was born and raised on a small farm just outside of Emmitsburg, Iowa. After high school, I came to Ames to attend Iowa State, and like so many of us, I decided that this was where I wanted to call home and put down roots and start a family. While I was at Iowa State, I earned a bachelor's and a master's degree in political science, and my master's thesis involved studying how city councils affect citizen satisfaction in rural Iowa. It was really a fascinating project, and it left me with a deep interest in local politics and representation. I want to serve on the Ames City Council because I love Ames. I do think we are headed in the right direction, and I want to help us move into the future in a way that allows us to maintain our unique identity. Decisions made at a local level are very important, and they affect all of us on a daily basis, And I want to serve on City Council because I think I will bring a fresh perspective and make informed, independent decisions based on what would serve best the widest group of us. Right now in Ames, I think some of the things that I would focus on would be looking at housing, increasing our housing options, and especially housing that is affordable for those who would maybe now work in Ames and would love to live in Ames too. I think we need to work on our multimodal transportation system, and the city has done a great job of that so far. I would just like to see that work continue and build strong transit system and strong pedestrian and bicycle commuting systems. And then also I think we need to look at our amenities and make sure that they fit a range of citizens, so youth and our growing senior population and everyone in between. As to what qualifies me, I think that my education and my work experience and involvement in the community all qualify me. Relating to my education, my focus was on how local governments function. And in addition to that, I really appreciate data. So this helps to fuel my desire to make informed decisions based on facts. As to my work experience, over 12 years ago, I got a job at Wheatsfield Cooperative, then on Douglas Avenue, downtown in Ames. And I have seen this community-owned grocery store grow both physically and from under 20 staff to now nearly 70 and 5,000 member owners. I have also owned and operated a small business, Cycles Recycling. And then I have enjoyed serving the Ames community in a number of ways, including as a past member of the Human Relations Commission, past Octagon board member, and a current member of the Ames Convention and Visitor Bureau's Board of Directors and Executive Committee. The things that brought me to Ames and made me decide to put down roots here are the same things that I will strive to nurture if I'm elected to City Council. And that's a strong sense of community and opportunity and then the beautiful natural resources that we have here in Ames. So thank you very much.
Thank you, candidates. Audience, it's now your turn to ask questions. If we have a question, I need for you to walk up to the front and state your name and ask the question, please.
Susie Petra, 2011 Duff. If elected, what are you prepared to do to get some low-income housing, the middle parcel of that middle school area?
I would look at some of the successes that we have had, and the best example I can think of is Bentwood, west on Lincoln Way there. And what the city did in that instance was provided assistance with the infrastructure to help bring the cost down for development of that area, which in turn then allows the cost to stay lower for people who would be inhabiting that area. Also, I think we should use the community development block grant funds, and if we use those to purchase the property, then that would mandate a certain percentage of that property be limited for those of low and moderate income. So I would favor that. I think whenever we do talk about affordable housing, though, we want to make sure that it's integrated well into the neighborhood that it's in. You certainly can't put an island of low-income housing in an area and expect that to integrate well. So I think we need to just make sure that it's well-planned and integrated well into the neighborhood there.
Dan DeGeest.
Hi, Susie. Thanks for the question. I have a lot of ideas for the old middle school property. I've been thinking about this project a lot. I think it's a great opportunity for the city to attempt to do development that's different than what they've done in the past. Some ideas that I've had are, first of all, we have a wonderful school of architecture here at Iowa State. We should engage Iowa State University. We have undergrads and masters and incredible faculty. We could look at how we build houses. So let's start by looking how the house itself is built. I'm sure there's a lot of innovative ways to reduce the cost and do different kinds of building. Other ideas are doing things like solar or possibly something like a community or a neighborhood-wide geothermal system. There's a lot of ways to drive down the cost of the house, not just the purchase price, but what's the long-term operating cost and what kinds of things can we do to make maybe the upfront cost isn't quite as low as we want, but over the life of the house, the people that can live there much more economically than they can somewhere else. Energy efficiency. Maybe the city could look at doing some energy efficiency kind of kickbacks or grants. Solar hot water is a great way to really save a lot of money on the cost of your house. Hot water is one of the most expensive parts of your yearly utilities. So I think there's a lot of creative things we can do, but somebody at the city council has to be pushing and asking those hard questions. It's not just about how do we get the land price down and build a cheap house. We've got to look at all kinds of different ways that we can make these houses affordable.
Tim Garten.
I'm going to let Chris talk about sort of the mechanics of where we are with the city. He can answer that question. I want to take just a little bit of time to talk about the reason why we're even talking about having lower income or moderate income housing on this middle parcel. It's because we've been through, I think it's a 100-year process. Is that how long we've been at it? I think it's something like 100 years. Maybe not quite that long, but it seemed like it. But this city council chambers was the scene of hours and hours, and a lot of people I see out here spent so much time. And so you are to be commended for your community involvement to help us reach the kind of situation that we're looking at now, where I think we are going to have an end result that the whole community is going to be very happy with. And so this is sort of a side point, but I do think it's important to note that the reason why we have a good outcome is because of neighborhood involvement. I'll let Chris talk about the mechanics of what we're going to do.
Thank you, Tim. As has been mentioned before, there will be community development block grant money involved with this from the city's perspective to purchase the property, which does require a low to moderate income component to it, probably be a minimum of 50%. And in Ames, what that means, or in Story County, what that means is that would be targeted at families or a family of four that has an income of $60,000 or less. I do believe that the city can issue guiding, input to a developer. The city will not develop this property. The city isn't a developer. I don't think we'd probably have the project that we would want if the city did do it in a time frame that would make sense to people. We can provide guiding input to people, developers, and really kind of get out of the way. And so there could be some very innovative things done there, but we are also constrained by a lot of development and building codes that may need to be looked at not just for this project, but across the entire city to make housing more affordable. Excuse me. And really, that's just one project that we have in the planning phase at the city council right now. We have the property to the north of the city hall that would be geared towards low to moderate income from a rental housing perspective. The middle parcel will be owner-occupied, single-family housing. We also are in the process of doing an inventory of a property in Ames that the city owns that we might be able to use for other affordable housing projects. So it's absolutely a priority of the council to increase the stock that we have now. That's probably the middle parcel is the biggest piece, the most visible piece right now, but it's absolutely something that we're working very hard on.
Thank you.
Thank you. I got a little ahead of myself. Let me back up a bit. If you don't want to come up and ask a question, you can write it down, and one of our league members will come and take the card and bring it up, and I'll read it for you. Also, those watching at home, if you're not here, of course, you can call in with your question, and I'll read it, and the candidates can answer it. Okay?
What number should they call, Davina?
You know, I knew you were going to ask that. It's on the bottom of the screen. I don't have it in my notes.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Yeah. I'm hoping that it's on the bottom of the screen. I don't have it in my notes.
239-5214.
Thank you. Next question.
Hi, I'm Fern Kupfer. I live at 2100 Ashmore Drive. We now have 36,001 students from ISU. That's 10,001 students more than we had 10 years ago. And many of them are living in Campus Town, which had affordable housing. There are only two family-owned houses on one block of Storm Street, which used to be mostly families. And the house that I bought over 40 years ago is a student rental now, as are a bunch of houses on Lynn Avenue. So when you talk about affordable housing, this is really a problem that we have to be proactive with regard to rentals, zoning, transfer of the inhabitants of that neighborhood, and I wonder if you had, everyone talks about affordable housing and, you know, we want it, but do you have any specific ideas about student rentals and taking over those neighborhoods?
Sure.
Let's start with Dan.
Sure. First of all, I heard that one student dropped out, so it's 36. So it's just 10,000 even. I went to school here in the late 80s, early 90s, and the street that I lived on when I was a student, Campus Avenue, was a mix of single-family homes and student rentals. And I was over there doing a little door knocking, and it's pretty much 100% student rental now on that entire street. And it's changed the character of that street from what I remember it being when I was that age. But I think to an actual ideas, I think we've already kind of started this process of trying to intensify Campus Town with some of these higher density, multi-story, commercial first floor and residential apartment type style of buildings that have been going up. You've seen them over by the Memorial Union. And there's a couple other ones that have been built previous years. So I think that's one good strategy. If we can keep that density in the Campus Town area, that should take pressure off of those single-family homes becoming student rentals. If more students can live close where they can walk and they can get to campus easy, I mean, that should become more attractive than living off out in a neighborhood where you've got to drive in to get to campus or you've got to, take the bus or it just takes longer. So I think really that intensification is key. I know that the City Council upcoming is going to do an entire Lincoln Way corridor study. We're going to look at how we can do some more of that type of intensification in the areas where it makes sense to doing a lot of this mixed retail with student-type rentals above it. So I think that's probably the number one way to work on that right now.
Okay. Fern, thanks for the question. And you've been sort of a community leader on this topic. Just a couple comments that I'd want to add. Part of the problem we have with the demand for converting these houses into rentals is that we haven't had enough high-density residential. And so, as Chris pointed out, we're having to serve and we're sort of in a reactive posture as the university has grown. And so those housing stocks are increasing. We're adding a large number of rental units, and that will help to take some pressure off of those houses going into rental properties. A second point is that we're in the process of working on our land use policy plan. And part of that process is going to be looking at the community and asking the question, are there areas where we could do some infill projects where it would make sense to increase the density? Now, if I've learned anything from the Breckenridge exercise, it's the importance of listening to our neighbors. And so I went to the Breckenridge, to the old middle school neighborhood, and I sat in living rooms, and I listened to people, and I sat through hours and hours of comments here. Now, I get it. We need to be good listeners, and we need to be sensitive to neighbors. So it's not that we just randomly pick areas of town and decide to target them for intensification. This is a very collaborative process where we interact with the people who are going to be impacted by these choices. So I can promise you that has really been a positive silver lining to the Breckenridge situation, as I think that you've got a city council that's very sensitive to the importance of listening to neighbors.
Chris Nelson.
Intensification probably is the top of the list. In very broad terms, as a rule of thumb, with the rapid growth that we've had in student enrollment, we lag about the year's worth of enrollment growth as far as bedrooms for rental availability. So if we grew 1,700 students, we're 1,700 beds short. We just can't catch up fast enough, and we can't predict that. So increasing the supply of student housing, higher density student housing, does two things. One, it takes the pressure off of those single family houses that have become rentals out in the community. But it also helps affect the cost of that housing for the students. If you look at the cost of rental housing in Ames for the broader community and as well as students, it is incredibly high compared to what it was when I was in school. You're seeing that manifest itself in student loans for students as well. So we can help with that piece of the process as well. And having these projects close to campus or close to a transit corridor is important so that we don't create other infrastructure problems as we move forward through this. But as, to Tim's point, we absolutely need to listen to the community and do these infill projects in the right places.
Brown Beatty Hansen.
That is a good question, and I agree with a lot of what's been said, too. I think that we have experienced a crunch in housing because of the rapid increase in enrollment at Iowa State, and so we have seen more apartment buildings coming online, and there are more to come online lately with increased density. So I'm thinking of along South 16th, for example. So as those come online, I think students typically like to live in areas with other students, so hopefully that can take some of the pressure off those kind of core neighborhoods. And then also, as was mentioned, the potential of intensifying along Lincoln Way would be a possibility, as long as, again, it ties into the transit systems we do have. It doesn't put more pressure on parking in those areas behind where intensification would happen. So again, I think it has to integrate well into the neighborhoods that are there. Updating the land use policy plan would certainly offer guidance for those areas of town that can be intensified without hurting the character or the quality of the neighborhoods that are there. And then I think also upholding the standards we do have should increase the sort of the difficulty of having high student density in neighborhoods. So making sure we are doing a good job of upholding parking standards, rental code standards, occupancy, things like that. So I think that would help as well. And then also the city should look at ways that it can incentivize the rehabilitation of old homes and convert them. Maybe there was a grant program at one time to convert multi-unit homes back into single-family homes intended to help with this very problem, and I think maybe that program could be revisited. So those are a few of the ideas I have.
Holly Fuchs, 806 Brookridge Avenue. Ames voters turned down a bond issue in 2014. It was about $10 million. It was supposed to cover half the cost of renovating Sheman, who's 40 years old, or Witt is 40 years old. The plans included adding a flat space to expand our convention facilities, and initially the estimates of the benefits were overstated, so it failed. What do you see as the best choice for Ames convention facilities? I think five options occurred to me. Renovate Sheman for probably a few million dollars. Renovate Sheman and add substantial additional space like the 2014 plan. Renovate Sheman and add substantial additional space and build a hotel. Provide convention space at some other location. Do nothing. So my question was, what do you see as the best choice for Ames convention facilities?
Tim Garten.
Thanks, Holly, for the question. So timing-wise, that process started before Chris and I joined the city council. So we were sort of like you, just sort of watching this thing play out. So I didn't have a role in thinking through that as part of the city's involvement. I served on the Ames Convention and Visitor Bureau, though, during the time of that vote, and watched, as you did, sort of the confusion that I think took place as a result of those conversations. There were some self-inflicted wounds, I think, in the course of that. And in hindsight, I think a lot of people wish we could have had that conversation a little better. I honestly don't know what the next point should be. I mean, I think that those who were involved in driving that need to take a long step back and sort of reassess things. The city was pretty clear. The residents were very clear. They didn't like Plan A. Okay? So if you're going to do a Plan B, you need to do your homework. Now, sort of the fun thing is that we have very smart people in the community, and when they vote things down, we go back and revisit these things. The library is a good example. Sometimes we get a much better result when we reject the first plan and we go back and listen to the community and try and do this again in a better way. But it's too early for me to have any specifics on what we should do. I will tell you that I do agree with the basic premise that it's sad that we're losing a lot of convention business to other communities. I would like to think that Ames would stay a community that would be able to attract these large conferences to our community. I love to see Ames full of cars on a weekend, using our businesses, staying in our hotels, adding to our tax base with local option sales tax. It's great. And we're losing some of that business now to other communities that have better convention space options.
Chris Nelson.
So plan B. I'm either going to answer this question well or get myself in a whole lot of hot water. Maybe both. There is a plan B. VenueWorks just recently took over the Iowa State Center, the management of the Iowa State Center. They have a plan. That plan involves a hotel. It involves some flat space. It involves renovating Sheeman. It involves an outdoor amphitheater. And it's right there on the campus of Iowa State Center, which I also think is a great place to put it. I'd hate to use more land for another non-taxable piece of property. This is not a small hotel. It's not a hotel that we really have too much of in Ames. It's a higher-end convention-style hotel, and the amphitheater outside is really a neat amenity. And this project is far along. They have renderings. They've talked to a construction manager. This could be 2 years away from dirt being turned. There's still a lot of questions, though. VenueWorks, the financing piece of it hasn't been flushed out yet. The Iowa State participation, I'm guessing, is still there. We may need to talk to them about participating at a city level, but I don't know to what extent that is. But it would be funded mostly by the management company of the Iowa State Center. So I'm not sure that you'll see the bond referendum come back anywhere near what it was before. And I think that we will have a convention space within 3 to 5 years.
Brown and Beatty Hansen.
I serve currently on the Convention and Visitor Bureau's Board of Directors, and I did too during that time. And I would say that it was definitely a clear decision by the people. The ACVB wanted to put it up for a vote, and I think once the people spoke and it was clear that a bond issue was not the way that the citizens wanted to go, I do think the Convention and Visitors Bureau did sort of re-examine its priorities, and it is also a fact that we are losing convention business to bigger areas, Des Moines especially. So they had to rethink what they were doing, and I think they've done a good job regrouping from that and coming up with a new plan to keep Ames hotels full, keep visitors coming. Visitors do bring vibrancy to Ames, certainly, both just by their presence and bringing vibrancy in that way, but also the money they spend and the tax dollars we get from it. So it is an important piece of the Ames economy, I think, and certainly drives a lot of retail and other sales. But that being said, the citizens spoke on that bond issue, so I think that if any flat space were to be developed and Sheeman renovated, that would probably happen through a private partnership and through Iowa State, and so it wouldn't come. I would be surprised if it came to a bond issue again.
Dan DeGeest.
So I know this is an issue that we need to work on. My father is a United Methodist minister, and for nearly every year that I've lived in Ames, they would have their convention here in the summertime in June, and they would hold it in Hilton Coliseum. So I got to see my dad for sure at least once, one week every year. He's busy a lot, so those were really great times to have him come here into the community. But several years ago, the United Methodist Church decided to not do that in Ames anymore, and the reasons were the cost and the accessibility of Hilton Coliseum. And there was a lot of issues, but a lot of reasons why they decided to move that conference to Des Moines. So I know that we are losing out on a lot of convention and that type of business. That one just alone brought in several thousand people for an entire week. In terms of how we actually do it, I haven't seen those renderings, but a comment I would make is that C.Y. Stevens, Sheeman, Hilton Coliseum are iconic buildings. They are beautiful. They have, you know, worldwide recognition. So anything you're going to build there has to be very carefully done because you want to keep the integrity of how that Iowa State Center looks. Another thing that we really need to consider is, this is a thing that really drives me to want to be on council, is looking at the bigger picture. So, okay, maybe there is land available by C.Y. Stevens, but what is it going to benefit? When people come to conferences, a big thing what they want to do is they want to have entertainment, they want to go out at night. I've been on work conferences before. You want to know what you can do in the city you're going to. And if we build something that's super far away or not near the kinds of things that people are going to want to do, then I think we're missing an opportunity there. So we really need to think about where it goes and how it will affect all of the other things that people are going to want to do when they're here. Is it going to add traffic? Is it going to be close to where people can go eat and entertainment and do the kinds of things they do? It's important to look at the big picture.
Hi, Sharon Goober, 2931 Northwestern. Tim, I'm glad you're answering all these questions because there could be a write-in. I really would like to pull up a chair and be in one of these living room conversations because I'd like to have a dialogue here. But question is coming from outside of the College Creek Old Ames neighborhood. You know that there are a lot of people that are looking at what's happening there and how it happens. They're also looking at other things that are being developed around Ames. And a major concern about agreements being made, I'll just cite Kingland and that area right now, where there are specifics that are supposed to happen, and then it's like, well, we really need to develop onto the sidewalk, or thought we had windows that were fixed, and you're not saying it's fixed. I mean, other things like that, where there are changes, what I'm trying to say, there are changes that are then agreed to by the parties, the city, part of those parties afterwards. And so what people would like to know is, what is your commitment to the agreement? The middle parcel has been zoned RL mutually by the parties. It was LUPPRL. It's always been RL. Are you talking about developing housing there that would be owner-occupied, that it would be single-family, single-lot, or something that fits into the RL? Because the other aspect of Ames are your long-term residents, the ones who are going to be here, you know, and build the community of Ames. And we're losing those people. Those are the ones who are employed and going elsewhere to become permanent residents at another community. We need those here. So what is your commitment to that? And then a concern is three-story apartments, that's large in that area. But if they say, we can't do it with three, we need four, will you hold to what the commitment is? I mean, there's real nervousness about this, frankly. Well, good luck answering that.
We start with Chris.
I think I get that one first. The commitment on the middle parcel is pretty straightforward. Yes, it's RL. Could that mean duplexes? I suppose maybe it could, but owner-occupied single-family housing is what that middle parcel is going to be. It may be a mix of, like we talked earlier, low to moderate income, CDBG-funded housing versus market housing, but absolutely, that is what my commitment to that middle parcel is. As to the apartment question on the north parcel, and I think in general, to speak to some of the other agreements that may have come back to council, I think there's a materiality. And to speak to the windows specifically, I'm not sure that that one really justified taking away tax abatement. There were some big dollars involved. They did spend the money. They ended up with a really nice building. The window, I think, is kind of irrelevant in the grand scheme of that discussion. Adding a floor onto a building is material. That is absolutely something that we would have to have a very long conversation about, which I'm sure we would. We're good at that. But I think that, that would probably be a deal breaker.
Brown, Beatty Hansen.
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say, in general, I think we should commit to doing what we've decided to do. That being said, there are maybe some things that I would entertain conversations about, but in general, no, I think it adds to stability and it to do what you say you're going to do and to follow through on that. So I think that's very important. We saw that happen to a certain extent when Rose Prairie was asking for exemptions in their development by Ada Hayden, and the council held firm on that one. And I think that's probably wise to do when you have development agreements that have been, especially a long time through a long, legal, arduous process. Those are very important to uphold. As for the middle school property, I would definitely commit to that being owner-occupied, single-family, low RL. I think it's important that we have more family housing within the Ames School District. A lot of the areas where we can build houses are outside the school district, and we need to maximize those areas of town where we can have families. And I think the middle parcel is a great opportunity for that.
Dan DeGeest.
So on the previous question, I said I'm super excited about the potential to do really innovative development on that old middle school property, and I would stick by that. So innovative, single-family, owner-occupied, but maybe done in a different way than we've done in the past. Look at, like I said, engage maybe the architecture department. Look at ways that we could build something different but still RL. I think as hard as the neighborhood has fought to get that RL zoning to stay there, I would not budge on that at all. In terms of going four stories on the three-story, I'm doubtful that I would be supportive of that either. If we're going to do all the work up front to lay down these urban revitalization requirements, and we're going to do all the research and we're going to decide what we want there, we should stick to it. We're giving them our money, so we should say this is what we expect. And I don't see any reason to back down from that when we're helping to pay for it. So I wouldn't back down on that. We use those abatements to get an outcome that we're looking for. We should stick to it. This is something I've been doing as a citizen, is watchdogging projects. I really think that the city needs to be doing more thorough and more frequent reviews of the projects that are ongoing, so that we don't get to the stage where it's like, oops, we put the wrong kinds of windows in. We've already built it. We've already done it all. Now can we come and can we have a change in our agreement? So we need to be looking at it earlier and more often.
Tim?
I don't have a lot to add to Chris's comment. And it's going to be fun. And Sharon, we should have a plaque up with your name on it as a result of this project, because you've worked so tirelessly towards getting a good result. When you look at the percentage of houses in that area that are owner-occupied, having all this track of being owner-occupied is going to be a huge improvement in the area. I'm very excited of what that's going to mean, having people who have skin in the game long-term being in that neighborhood. So I don't really have anything more to add on Chris's point. One of the things that I would also take just a second on is, and maybe we'll get to talk about this more tonight, we're behind the curve in terms of providing housing in Ames. And one of the things I do for a living is I conduct real estate closings. And I hate to see people who work in Ames, would choose to have their kids in Ames, would choose to be involved in our churches, in our nonprofits, and they live somewhere else. That's really frustrating to me. So I appreciate sharing your comment, and we want to keep those people in our community being part of who we are. We're losing a lot of good people because we don't have available housing stock.
I'm Mary Sand, 245 Todd Circle. With all the development that's occurring in Ames, what do you view as Ames' responsibility for preserving agricultural land?
Brown and Beatty Hansen.
Well, I think there are some definite boundaries that we have, I mean, in development. So 190th to the north is the city's limit there. And I think around Ada Hayden, it's interesting because agricultural land, I think, can often have a more negative impact on a watershed than a residential area. So I think the conservation subdivision that they've established near Ada Hayden is valuable and would help, I think helps that watershed in the long run. And then there are other natural boundaries around Ames. I know a lot of the land to the south is owned by Iowa State, and that's even agricultural land that they own. So I don't know that there are opportunities to develop, you know, in those areas. Iowa State isn't currently interested in letting go of that property. So it's a good question, though, and I'd like to learn more about it.
Dan DeGeest.
Again, I would focus on intensification of the campus town area, take the pressure off of those single-family homes, open those up for the people who are looking to buy owner-occupied homes so they can buy those houses, renovate those, and live there, so we don't need to necessarily build as many new houses and continue to acquire as much land on the fringe and out, you know, west, north, whichever way we go. We should look at our existing building stock and other kinds of buildings. Crawford School, for example, is an idea that that property might become available at some point and no longer be used for its current use and sold by the school district. That's another opportunity to do a really interesting project like we did with the Roosevelt School. So let's look at historic preservation, look at using all of our existing buildings, look at our infill areas. There are still lots in town that aren't developed. There's not a lot of them, but we can continue to look at using those. I was door knocking over on just off of Forest Glen, and somebody's building a brand new house back in there. I haven't seen a new house built in there in 20 years. So there are still housing projects that go on in the land that we have. I do think we'll have to annex some land. I mean, we do have an extreme growth going on, so there probably will be some agricultural land that we will annex. There's already some annexation projects underway. But we just need to be smart about it, and when the next council looks at the land use policy plan, really just needs to look at that and look at the goals that we have as a city for walkability, bikeability, healthy living, and really decide the best ways to use the land we have and to annex in land only as a last resort if we need it.
Tim Garten.
Bronwyn brought up a really good point that agricultural land sometimes is an enemy to water quality. If there are things we can do in a smart way in terms of conservation-oriented subdivisions, we can actually improve the water quality coming off that land. So that's a very important point she brings up. The reality is there is not enough land within Ames to provide for all the housing demand. If you're looking for a candidate that does not want to see the size of Ames grow, you need to ask us hard questions. Because if what you're really wanting is a moratorium on growth, so there's no expansion of the footprint of Ames, I think it's a great question. We could have really a whole forum on this subject, but I think we're going to have to increase the footprint of Ames.
Chris Nelson?
Yeah, this is a really complicated question, and there really are three strategies for tackling it. Outward geographic growth is going to have to be a piece of it. Ames has crossed a tipping point. We're not going to shrink. People want to live here. People want to work here. People want to come to school here. And there are projections that Ames is 85,000 people and within the next 25 to 30 years. There is not enough land in town to intensify and infill to handle anywhere near that amount of new residents. So geographic growth is going to be happening. But I do agree that it needs to be done in a responsible manner. It is all interplay. There are housing affordability concerns here, like Tim mentioned. But there are places for intensification. We've talked about Campus Town already. That's been a fantastic intensification process. I think that's really changing the look and feel of Campus Town in many ways for the better. A lot of kids are living closer to campus. It gets cars off roads. It's creating a growing tax base. The downside you hear is people saying, well, my old haunt is gone. And that's true. Change sometimes is challenging. But infill projects, I think there are opportunities there too, but they're going to be kind of one-off onesie-twosies. Now, that being said, we do have two or three infill projects that are probably in the works sooner rather than later. The DOT is potentially divesting the old St. Cecilia School, and there might be opportunity there for infill. Again, that would involve the neighborhood to make sure that we aren't putting up a 15-story building with 3,000 residents across the street from people in single-family houses. But that's a place where we could infill. There might be some opportunities for some low-density housing at the Edwards School site. And then we'll see what happens to Crawford. There's maybe a few hundred beds. So we have to look at places where it makes sense to grow and where we can do it responsibly.
The League encourages everyone to vote. In addition to candidates for seats on the Ames City Council, the ballot will also include candidates for seats on the Mary Greeley Medical Center Hospital Board of Trustees. They are Sarah Buck, Brad Hemstra, and Kenneth McCuskey. Voting will be held on Tuesday, November 3rd, from 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. at your assigned polling location. Same-day voter registration is permitted in Iowa, giving voters greater opportunity to vote. However, early registration is encouraged to avoid long waits at the polls. Friday, October 23rd at 5 p.m. is the deadline for early registration. The last day to request an absentee ballot is Friday, October 30th. Please visit the Story County Auditor's website for complete information at www.storycountyiowa.gov. As a final note, the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County is sponsoring an electronic voter guide, vote411.org. All of the candidates for the Ames City Council and the Mary Greeley Medical Center Board of Trustees have been asked to post biographical information and their responses to issues impacting Ames. So please visit vote401.org. This concludes the Ames City Council candidate forum. Thank you again, candidates, for your commitment to serving the citizens of Ames. Thank you to the City of Ames for the use of council chambers. Thank you to Derek Chrysler and his staff for televising and streaming this event. And thanks to each of you for actively participating in the government process. Good night.
Heart of Iowa has presented the League of Women Voters Candidates Forum for Ames City Council candidates held October 8th.